Welcome to the Confidence for Rockstar Marketers podcast. I'm Anna Iverson, a story-driven copywriter who helps you turn your stories into compelling marketing campaigns that generate obsessed mega fans, not just one-off transactions.
And I'm Helen Walker, a no-fluff mindset coach who helps you throw away the beliefs that are holding you back, so you have the confidence to make your most audacious entrepreneurial dreams a reality.
On this show, we'll introduce you to the latest marketing strategies from cutting-edge industry experts, and we'll teach you how to overcome your demons so you can implement these strategies in your business right away.
If you're looking for straight-talking, no-fluff advice you can put into action right away, stick around and let's dive into the show.
Hey, Anna here. So I have a tiny weeny confession to make. Ever since I was little, I've been an insatiable book hoover. Dig down deep underneath my email writing bravado and you'll probably find a frustrated book writer with a secret desire to write a book one day. Now, I'm talking a proper book, not like my email story generator ebook, which is awesome and you can get a copy in the show notes. I'm talking a real proper book. But part of me thinks it's just never going to happen. It's such an enormous undertaking requiring months, if not years of dedication and time that, frankly, I just don't have. And what if it bombs? So I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in this. I know tons of other business owners who truly believe they have at least one epic book in them, but they're just not sure how to make it happen. Well, today's guest is going to help put our minds at rest so we can move one step closer to actually starting that book we've been thinking about. We're joined today by Dr. Cindy Childress, the expert ghostwriter. She's a ghostwriter and book editor who helps her entrepreneur clients write books that make more money and more impact. She co-authored The Logical Law of Attraction and has helped get her clients on bestseller lists more times than she can remember.
Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Can you tell us how you got started as a ghostwriter?
Yes, it was kind of by accident. I began as a copywriter. And I had a PhD in English. And then my friend needed a book editor, and I offered to do it. And I found that even though she was very happy with the edits and the book turned out fantastic, I saw that there was more help I could have given her if I'd been there from the beginning, like say if I'd just written the book for her, which is exactly what the ghostwriter does. So I pivoted from copywriting to ghostwriting. I first offered to do it at a very low price just to get some experience under my belt and also to have some examples of my work, and off I went.
And you used to run an agency, is that right?
Yes, I began my business in 2017, and because I'm really a natural salesperson, I didn't have a lot of difficulty finding clients. But what I found was so many clients, I couldn't do all the work myself. So I started hiring my friends who were talented writers, and I quickly grew to myself, and then I had 4 staff members. So that was really a different process because I would sell the work and then I would work with my team to get the work done. And just from various things, you know, I had to let one person go because they just weren't really pulling their weight. And then other people found other opportunities. One had a baby and decided she didn't want to come back anytime soon. And as I lost my employees, instead of hiring more people, what I noticed was without them, I was able to be more selective about the jobs I took. Instead of just saying yes to everyone to try to keep my team busy, I could be more strategic about the jobs I actually wanted to work on and the clients I wanted to work with. And I really became more niched and was able to charge more and ultimately be more profitable.
So a lot of our listeners are at the point in their own businesses where they're looking to scale. So can you tell us a little bit about the mindset shift that you had to go through to take your business from just you as the ghostwriter to running an agency with a whole team? Because that must have been a massive, massive shift for you.
Yes, I did have an advantage that I had led a team before. I had previously been a manager of a $1 million gym. So I had that experience where I had a team of 6 personal trainers that answered to me and I was responsible for their training. And then I'd also led a call center where I was in charge of all the call center staff's excellent performance on their sales scripts, and their conversions were my responsibility. So I had that background coming in. So I already kind of understood, you know, different kinds of leadership models and the kinds of communication that you need to have with the team in order to be successful. But absolutely, because when you're a freelancer and it's only about you, you're only thinking about what do I want to be doing and who do I want to work with? Whereas with the team, I looked at everybody and their skills and what they wanted to work on. And then I tried to find clients and projects that would help them do their individual things they wanted to be doing too. So yeah, it's definitely very different.
Well, you sound like an awesome boss if you were taking the time to figure out what was going to best fit what people wanted to do and what their skill set were. So I reckon a lot of entrepreneurs think that publishing a book is kind of a nice to have, maybe when they have a bit of spare time to put pen to paper. Why do you think people should make writing a book more of a priority? And what impact have you seen for business owners who have taken the plunge?
Absolutely. So the reason you wouldn't want to put a book off is that this can be one of the best credibility markers to quickly move you from unknown and unvetted to proven, and really starting to build the kind of authority platform and following that can help you get, you know, more exposure through better speaking engagements, paid speaking engagements, and just really building your audience and your list to find more people who might be interested in the offers you have with your book. I always encourage authors to, the first thing we do before we ever write a word is think, what do you want the readers to do next after reading your book, which is to continue engaging with you in some way where they pay you money? So maybe that's a course, membership sites, retreats can work, you know, but something where you're going to offer them something else. And then we build the book as the vehicle to make them the ready audience to accept what that offer is. So in that way, if you have, you know, some of those other pieces already in your business, why not use a book as a lead generation vehicle toward those offers? I think delaying it just delays your massive list building potential.
It's interesting, actually. I saw a poster on your Instagram today about Donald Miller's first book, and he was talking about how the biggest mistake he made was not using it as a almost like a higher value lead magnet and as a way to build his list. And that's not really a way that I would have necessarily thought about writing a book, but it makes perfect sense. So yeah, I love that post. I thought it was really interesting.
Oh, thank you. And if you've read his most recent book, it is a pure lead magnet, just the same way that Dan Kennedy's books are, where he's always talking about his golden circle and how to go get your free 1 week. You know, and you look at Donald Miller's most recent book, and you know, every chapter ends with a call to action to hire a guide if you don't want to figure this out yourself. Of course, they're his guides. Yeah.
It was almost a little bit annoying. Yeah. the extent that he went with it, like you kind of felt like every page it was like, sign up to this resource, sign up to this resource. So yeah, but I totally get why it works, and it's a way to lead people into bigger upsells and programs and one-to-one coaching if that's the way you want to go with it. So I know you've just closed the launch on your own program that leads your students through your book writing process so they can crank out their own book in 8 weeks. Most of our listeners would absolutely love the idea of creating a proper book in such a short period of time, but they might be thinking, you know, that sounds amazing, but is it actually possible? So do you see any common reasons why people might think that writing a book needs to take much longer than 8 weeks?
Absolutely. In fact, I have a client, I edited her book in 2018. And when she came to me then, she'd been working on it since 2001. So, you know, if you have heard stories like that and you carry a belief that writing a book is very painful and it takes a very long time, then you're going to expect that to be the case. But what I find is that time shrinks or expands depending on your expectations for it. So I have, I'm actually the daughter of a CPA, and I'm very creative, but I'm also very analytical. So I have created a system based on your words per hour that you can write when you're being in a generative state, which is to say generative, you're generating material, you're not in an editing phase. And then we look at your target word count for the book. And then based on your average word count per hour, we look at how much time is necessary in order to write this. And then we book it on your schedule. And then I have the students create tables of contents and write their own open-ended questions the same way I would as a ghostwriter in order to elicit the information that you're going to write. And so in that case, when you sit down to write, you're not just saying, clarity, what's everything I have to say here? Well, now I'm overwhelmed. Instead, you're answering your questions about clarity to unpack the information. So in that way, you can write very quickly. I've never seen an expert who is thoroughly an expert on their topic and has a lot of experience get asked a question in their space and just be stumped. So in the same way, it won't happen when you're actually writing, when you have that targeted way to get the words out.
Now, I feel a bit daft, actually, because I never realized that some of these personal development books and business books were actually a form of lead magnets, but it makes perfect sense.
Has this blown your mind?
This has blown my mind. Now I want to write a book.
Yes, do it.
It does. And it's like the penny's just dropped. I'm just thinking about like all the books that I've read where it's have a look here and here's an extra resource. And it always goes to their website or a freebie or, you know, a course that they're delivering.
That's so funny.
I feel like I've fallen into their web.
The mystery is over.
I'm going to be reading them now going, I know what you're up to. I know what you're trying to make me do.
That's awesome. And you know, when it's done really well, it feels invisible and it just feels helpful. So when you think about creating a really great lead magnet for your book and you're an author, what you want to do is think of something that shouldn't already be in your book. Because if they feel like it should be included, they kind of smell the scam. It's not really a scam, but they smell the trickery involved. But when you have something else that you're offering that wouldn't be included in the book, but is also of value, then it feels like you're doing your reader the favor. And I'll give you an example. Todd Herman's book, he's got a free workbook that comes with it. And if he'd written the book differently, everything in the workbook could just be in an exercise section of each chapter. But the way he's done it, he ends each chapter with like, and now go check out the workbook and do your exercises. But because it's a whole workbook, it feels like I got something amazing for free, because otherwise, you know, I may have had to pay another $19.99 for that in addition to the book.
This is brilliant. I'm loving this. I'm just thinking of so many people who I now follow on like social media because I've read their book and they've given me these free resources and I'm going, this is amazing. Like, they're giving me all this extra stuff. Like, how good are they? How good must their programs be if this is what they're giving me away for free?
Yeah. It's all part of the funnel. It was all part of the master plan.
So you can probably gather, Cindy, that I have read my fair share of personal development and business books. I probably average about one a week of these kind of books. But I heard that on average, about 38% of nonfiction readers ever get to the end of a book. I mean, you take quite a unique approach in writing self-help books, which combines this story and educational content. Why is it important to combine the two? And what's the best way to marry them together?
Yes, that was a fantastic question. I'm so glad you asked. So yes, the thing about books that are too information heavy is they feel unrelatable. And even if you learn the information and you feel smarter, you may not actually apply it or do anything. I mean, think how many books you've read that were maybe interesting and you learned something, but you never did anything with it. And probably what's happening there is they're not anchoring it and grounding it for you in a story that you can relate to. So when you think about it, story adds those elements of sensory details, smell, taste, sound, feel, so that you embody the information. And then you're more likely to apply it. It feels more relatable. You also build a relationship with your reader as the writer when you tell stories about yourself. And, you know, we just mentioned Donald Miller in his book. He's got a story about meeting his wife and then not asking her out and then having to try again 3 years later. That's a really compelling story that makes me feel like I know something really personal about him. So that makes it feel like there's a trust and rapport that's being built. Whereas if he just deleted that, the information would still be there, but it wouldn't be anchored for me in an emotional memory of his that I now share. So that's some of the power. And then in terms of people not finishing the book, you also want to put your best stuff in the beginning. There's, you know, if you think about the 5-paragraph essay and how that's taught in a classic English class, they'll have you, you have a hook and then you have a really good point, but then they want you to have maybe your best point at the end when you have your big blowout thing. But that's because a teacher's reading it and they're going to grade it. In the real world, nobody has to finish anything they start reading. So knowing that most people won't, what can you do to put your very best stuff in the beginning? And also have your calls to action early and often. That's why Donald Miller's doing that in his book. And he doesn't expect most people like you and me to actually get to the end. But if you only read 2 chapters, you've still been told to get the download and hire a guide 2 or 3 times.
Story-driven marketing is one of the best ways you can generate obsessed mega fans instead of just one-off transactions. And one of the most versatile stories you can tell in your marketing is your origin story, which is why I created the Raw Authority Playbook. It's a free interactive workbook that helps you uncover a unique origin story you can share practically anywhere to convert lukewarm leads into obsessed buyers. Visit www.confidentmarketer.co.uk and grab your free copy right on the homepage.
It is it's interesting what you say there about adding stories. And I know this is something that Anna talks a lot about, and I've learned so much from Anna about stories. But I think every single guest who we've had on the podcast has said exactly what you've said about having the confidence just to share your own story and just being authentic, and how you know, the person listening or the person reading just really connects with that story and you know, maybe wants to buy from you just because they share some common ground and share those feelings that you're describing.
Absolutely. One thing I do with all my ghostwriting clients is we figure out your shared values, interests, and concerns between yourself and the reader. And we do that so we can pepper that throughout the book. And this is not anything very different from what a lot of the branding experts that I'm friends with will do too when they're coming up with your website concept and kind of the things you talk about besides just your business. And those become the things that you and your reader have in common. Like for me, that is animal rescue and fosters and having pets. And I talk about that a lot because once you get on the phone with me, you know, a cat could walk across my laptop at any moment and maybe even sit there. And so I want to attract people that are going to find that adorable and engaging. And you can always ask me, how are my pets? And you know, I can always speak to it. And so you feel like you know me. You know, when that happens in your books, then your readers might even think of you and send you something when they think of you, which is about some of the other interests that you have, not necessarily just your topic. And that's another way to also get raving fans that just really feel like they're completely in your world and like you get them.
Yeah, I've heard that before as well. It's almost like creating an in-joke with your audience so that you've always got this kind of talking point that you can play around with together. So what's your view on the balance between the story portion of a book and the kind of educational content? Because a couple of examples that frustrated me slightly were when I read The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. Mm-hmm. I felt like too much of that was his story. Like there was very little content in that book. And also The Ask Method as well. Like I really liked the book, but mm-hmm. a huge chunk of that book was personal story, and it almost felt like it was filler content to mask the fact that the actual educational part of it was maybe lacking somewhat. Do you have a formula maybe for what the balance should be?
Yes, those are great examples, and you also make me think of the book Traction, which is just a lot of story about clients that Cy Wickman worked with, and then very little actual teaching the method. And that's because he wants you to hire one of his traction coaches and buy his traction software, right? Because that's where the money is for him. But on the other hand, when you think about Rachel Hollis's Girl Wash Your Face, that is mostly story with some bulleted teaching points toward the end of the chapter. So I think it can be done to be story heavy, but if you're going that route, the stories need to be compelling and they need to make sense as to why you're telling them. The stories themselves should be instructional so that you don't have to hit the reader over the head with a lot of explanation. But I definitely agree with you. Readers are smart and you should respect your readers. If you're trying to tell a bunch of story to mask the fact that you're trying to keep your actual teaching as paid content and separate, your readers will figure that out. But, you know, and that's not what Rachel Hollis is doing. She's mostly building rapport and telling stories. And then she's got some quick teaching points. But the point of her book isn't to then go interact with some other content that teaches you more. It's to interact with some other content that doesn't go deeper, but just goes into other areas. So if you liked this, you're going to like that as well. And so I think there it feels more authentic because she's not purposefully holding back education. She's just only giving the readers what would be appropriate because she's just, you know, really an average blogger at the end of the day. And so she's not trying to hold herself up as a super expert. She's just somebody that's, you know, 10% ahead of her followers, which are a massive volume.
So along that same vein, what would you say, because there's a lot of advice out there about holding back content so that you can then use it as part of an upsell later on. And maybe if there are some people where you maybe, if they've reached guru status, but you'd maybe question how deep their knowledge is on the subject that they're claiming to be an expert on. What would you say to people who maybe worry that the book that they're putting out is too lightweight because they feel like they need to hold something back to sell at the end? How can they balance that between giving away the farm so that they have nothing that they can offer at the end of the book?
Yes, I would think about where your reader is at the point when they pick up your book. What's the problem they're trying to solve? What's the reason they want to enter this world with you? And then think, where do you want them to be by the end of the book, such that they've had the quick wins they need to be ready to continue engaging with you in whatever your offer is going to be. And then when you look at it that way, I just earlier today, actually, I spoke with a client who had this very question, and we figured out that she had really two exercises in each chapter that were quite in depth. And so we looked at if she just kept the journaling part where you just did more thinking through the concept that she was teaching in that chapter, and then the action steps portion, which was still quite lengthy, she could say, and if you want to know more about how you can apply this, go check out my course. So in that way, she would still be giving you something. And then if you want even more, she tells you where to get it. But you are getting quick wins. I think where people miss the mark is they're afraid to give anything in the book that would be of value. And that is really a mistake, because the more you know and the more you share, the more you know and the more you share. You know, you can give the farm away for free. Think of a business coaching client, business coach who will just meet somebody at a party and solve all their problems and then, you know, realize they didn't make an appointment. So that can happen. But in general, the more you share and prove what you know, then people just think, wow, this is so cool. And imagine how much more there's going to be when I pay to work with them. And when you're an expert, there's always going to be more. Personally, I'm not afraid of ever running out of writing expertise that I can share. And a lot of times people are glad to hear the same thing again because they hear it in a different way. Or if they read it in your book, then when they engage with it in the course, that might be when they go, aha. I wouldn't be afraid of repeating information either, or taking something you've already got in the book and then just in your course explaining it differently and going into more detail, swapping out the examples, because then people are going to relate to it in a fresh way.
What advice would you give to somebody? A lot of my clients are people who are starting out businesses or in the early stages of running their business. And they often get really nervous and lack kind of self-belief, even publishing something like a blog. So the thought of publishing a book where everybody's going to read it and, you know, it's that worrying of what will people think of me, you know, especially if they're writing from their own perspective. What tips do you have for, I suppose, to overcome that self-doubt?
Yes. First of all, writing blogs is a great place to start. And one thing that I encourage the authors that I work with to do is as they get some of the chapters written, start sharing little bits of that writing in social media captions or in blogs to get feedback and really validation, but also to vet these ideas with their actual audience, because then that's where you will find a lot of confidence. Because when people like your post, or when people say, wow, I never thought of it that way, and you're like, oh, I thought it was obvious. Well, now you've got that validation that people want to hear from you on this topic. And so you're more motivated to keep writing and flesh it out. One problem that could be coming up is like imposter syndrome, or, you know, who am I to claim this authority for myself? And, you know, when people think about that, that's really more of a mindset issue than an actual problem. You can definitely go out there and find people with less experience and less credibility who are claiming their authority in your space. And I like to look at those for motivation, because then it's like, okay, well, I know more than they do. I can explain that way better than that. I have way better examples. And then you start thinking as well, how am I going to be different? And what makes me special in this space? And you start developing your voice and the audience of exactly who you want to be talking to. And as you're finding them, then you're increasing in that confidence and that certainty that there's an appetite for what you want to say.
I read something the other day, actually, that I thought was brilliant. I think it was it Denise Duffield Thomas? I think it was her book, where she was talking about, you know, overcoming this imposter syndrome of, you know, whether you're talking about something or writing it down, this feeling that you must be an expert, like reframing that and thinking, I'm just contributing to the conversation rather than proclaiming that I'm an expert. And I thought, what a brilliant way to look at it, because that then just takes the pressure off. You know, you're just saying, here's my view. Let me join in this conversation. You're not saying I know everything on this subject.
Yes, that's a lot of what we do in my 3-day Epic Author Challenge, where we look at what bookshelf should your book be on. Because when you're choosing the bookshelf, you know, or the category, the Amazon category for your book, you're also thinking about the conversation that you're entering and who else is in this space. And even maybe what do you not need to cover so much because somebody else has already covered it. You know, if Joe Dispenza already wrote the book on that, you can just say he did. And then just speak to the little bit of information there that you wanted to, you know, share your own take on and go from there. I think it's a huge mistake when people are scared to say where they learn things or talk about other people in their industry. That just gives you credibility. And yes, it also gives you the freedom not to have to be the expert on everything. And again, I would say Rachel Hollis is a great example of somebody who doesn't claim to have climbed the whole mountain, but is just bringing as many people as she can on the journey she's on. And is wildly successful.
You'll often find me pouring my way through antique bookshops. I love going to those places and just looking through the shelves and seeing what amazing books they've got. And I always feel like a book just has this, I don't know, there's something almost sacred about a book that you don't get from something else, like watching a YouTube video or watching a video series just doesn't have the same weight to it as a book. Do you think there will ever be a day when books lose that feeling, that because they almost have like a higher status than any other kind of content? I almost don't understand why. Why we hold
please, I do not want to see
esteem.
That day. I do not want to see that day when books go.
I don't want to see that day either. What I will say is the demise of the book industry has been greatly exaggerated so far. You know, with the advent of the ebook, they said, oh, you know, publishing is going to be dead, books are gone. But that hasn't been true at all, both with physical books, and they found ways to make the digital versions of the book profitable to sell as well. And then, you know, with the advent of self-publishing, again, everybody said, oh, books are over, books are dead, literature is doomed. And, you know, that hasn't really been the case at all. And what you find is self-published authors are just getting smarter and smarter and connecting to resources so their books look and feel professional the way that traditionally published books do. So that hasn't been the end of books. If I was going to say, how could books lose their social currency? It would probably be that something else replaces them. If you think about how the college degree used to be the gold standard for what you could do to better yourself, now it's really the master's degree. And now the PhD, you know, which I have one of those, is like, you know, that's the best way to prove yourself in those arenas. So I think when something else comes along that is considered superior, and I have no idea what that format would be or what that would look like, but when that time comes, it would, could, and then I think that's when we would see a shift.
We need to bring back the stone tablet.
Or papyrus, yes.
Well, Cindy, this is, I mean, my mind has been blown on more than one level on this topic. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was a pleasure.
So at this part of the show, we like to invite all our guests just to play a fun little game with us so that everyone can get to know the less serious side of you. So we're going to play a short game of Would You Rather, if that's all right with you.
Let's do it.
Would you rather write a book no one reads or a book that everyone reads but hated?
Everyone reads but hates.
Oh, that's interesting. I want to know why.
Yeah, well, I kind of think any publicity is good publicity. So even if everybody hates the book, if it's widely read, I'm still going to be talked about. And then when I have another book, there's going to be some curiosity if it's just as bad or even worse. And anything that drives them to read it is going to be a bonus.
That's such a great way to look at it. Okay, so would you rather start every sentence with, hey, good looking, or end every sentence with, ha ha, just kidding?
That's amazing. I think I would begin every sentence with, hey, good looking. And why would I do that? Well, the audience likes to be flattered. And I wouldn't want to end everything I say with, never mind. I think that's the choice.
Would you rather get up at 4 a.m.? Or stay up until 3 a.m. every day for the next 5 years?
Wow. Neither. I guess I would stay up until 3, although that would be painful.
Oh, I'm the total opposite. I would do 4 a.m. starts every day. I'm terrible at staying awake in the evening. I'm ready for bed. In fact, I should really be in bed right now.
I've got two kids. I'm usually up at 4:30 every day anyway. So thank you, Cindy. That has been absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Thank you so much to Cindy for sharing all those amazing insights with us and for putting our minds at rest about what it really takes to write a book that people actually want to read. I know Helen's mind, if you couldn't tell from listening to the episode, was well and truly blown by the power of writing a book on attracting more leads for her audience. So if you want to nerd out with Cindy on all things book writing, you can visit www.cindychildress.com and you can download her free training video entitled How to Write a Book People Actually Want to Read. Go to her homepage and you can find the training right there, and we'll link to that for you in the show notes. You can also follow Cindy's beautiful Instagram feed and find out all of her best tips on how to write your very own expert book at Cindy Childress PhD. I hope you enjoyed the show and we will catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to keep up to date with all our future episodes, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Or share us with a friend that you think will benefit from our content.